Hey everyone, I recently had a chance to speak with Eliza McNitt, the director of Ancestra, a short film that's really interesting because it's the first production between Google DeepMind and Primordial Soup, that's Darren Aronofsky's production studio, and it's exploring the use of AI when it comes to video production, and specifically it's using Veo, which is Google's AI video production tool. And if you've seen the news about this and AI production for any sort of media at this point, you know it's a really controversial topic because DeepMind and other AI models like the stuff from OpenAI, those are all based on large-scale consumption of copyrighted works, and they certainly did not compensate the artists who created that. So there's a really strong argument that these tools are essentially plagiaristic tools when it comes to creating art. So I knew all that going in, and, you know, as somebody who also reviews movies, I am not a huge fan of these tools either. I don't think it's really going to be a good thing for human creativity, and I don't think it's going to really add much to movies going forward. But I was interested in talking with Eliza McNitt because I've been covering her work for a while. She actually has done a bunch of VR products that have had a lot of acclaim. There was Fistful of Stars, which used images from the Hubble telescope. And I wrote about Spheres, which is a VR thing she did that was, you know, sort of exploring the birth of stars and galaxies and kind of where we came from. So I really wanted to see how Eliza, you know, was thinking about using AI in general, and also what led her to produce Ancestra, which is a really personal short film. It's about a woman who finds out that, you know, her pregnancy is in trouble and she has to have an emergency C-section. And Eliza tells us in the interview that this is actually based on her own birth and what her mother went through. So the project itself is personal. There is a lot of genuine filmmaking in here too, because there are live actors and there are normal filmmaking techniques. She uses Veo and AI tools to produce this imagery that sort of connects the birth of herself to all births, to the creation of the universe, to, I guess, the creation of all life. It's a really trippy film. It reminds me a lot of Aronofsky's work, actually. A lot of the imagery from The Fountain seems like it's here. But it's a little messy because it's coming from AI, and, you know, I'm not a huge fan of that. So anyway, here's our chat, and I want you to hear Eliza's responses and judge for yourself if you think this is a justification for using AI tools. We also talk about things that need to be changed in this industry, like producing AI models that are not built on copyrighted works, and she does agree with that as well. So I think we had a great chat, and Ancestra is available on YouTube right now. You can check that right out. Here's Eliza McNitt. Eliza McNitt, thank you so much for joining us on the Engadget podcast.
Thank you for having me. Really excited to be here.
It's great to talk with you. Also, I talked with you around some of your earlier projects, like Spheres and the other one. So it's great to have you down on a podcast here. I saw Ancestra. It is a really cool project and a really cool view, I think, of somebody dealing with a pregnancy and crisis. Mm-hmm. That's something my family has dealt with a couple of times. So I get the anxiety. I get that feeling. But I have to ask, this is also notable for being one of the first Google DeepMind projects, and it's notable for using AI imagery in here and generative AI. Can you talk about what was the initial idea for this project? And did you always have AI as a thing that you were going to work with here?
I was initially approached by Darren Aronofsky and their company, Primordial Soup, to...
What a sentence, by the way. Wow. Few people can say that, but that's great.
It's an absolute honor to, you know, have Darren as a mentor and to be able to collaborate with them. And I, you know, was challenged to create an idea that could incorporate AI. And so for me, I wanted to tell a really deeply personal story in a way that I had not been able to before. And so for me, AI really offered this opportunity to access these worlds where a camera cannot go, from the cosmos to the inner world of being within the mother's womb. And so I had this immediate desire to tell a story about the day that I was born and how my mother had to fight for her life and my life when they, you know, discovered that there was something abnormal with my heart.
how do you personally view AI as an artistic tool right now? Because kind of the conversation we're seeing, and I'm also a part-time film critic, so I see this like from the different ways of talking about technology and art, but there's a lot of criticism against it, and a lot of people are against it just because of the idea of generative AI kind of being, it's kind of like inherently plagiaristic because it's built on models that are built on pre-existing art. How are you thinking about this tool at this point?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think something that everybody needs to be considering as they are entering this and creating work with this. I think, you know, for me with this particular situation, with the story I was telling, it was something that is really personal, where I wanted to create, you know, I wanted to create images that were things that you could not necessarily do before. And so that was broken down into a few things that were really important for me within the story. The first one being that I wanted to have myself as a newborn baby be in the film. And so that was something, you know, there's few options when you have a newborn baby, when you're shooting a film. You can shoot with a doll, you can use CGI, or you can have a newborn baby on set, which felt really unethical. And, you know, children and babies can't act. And we wanted some really important moments that were actually based directly off of the photographs that my father took of me as a newborn baby. And so, you know, by creating, by basically training the model on the images of me as a child that my father took, and my father's actually recently passed. And so...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. No, and it was a really special part of the project for me to be able to understand, you know, basically to train the model on those images, to figure out, you know, what did he take them with? How did he create those photos? What was the film stock? And then be able to create a baby that was, you know, my image. It felt like I was able to add into the process my father's DNA as well. And, you know, I felt in telling this story about my family, that was really important, especially since, because it was an emergency cesarean, my father wasn't able to make it. And so he was there just right after. But so yeah, I think, you know, in that respect for me, I felt the use of AI was really important for this story. And I think it's up to, you know, it's up to every artist to decide how they want to use these tools and define that. And that was something else for me in this project, where I had to define a really strong boundary where, you know, I did not want actors to be AI. Actors had to be humans with a soul. I do not feel that an performance can be recreated by a machine. I do deeply and strongly believe that, you know, humanity can only be captured through human beings. And so I do think it's really important to have humans at the center of the stories, and be the center of the team itself. And, you know, that's why we had so many artists involved in this project and basically created this, you know, additional team, which was this AI unit that were contributing to the creation of the AI imagery.
I do want to point out that the lead actress of this short, Audrey Corsa, her performance is phenomenal. I think she really grounds the shorts, and to me is my favorite part of it. But I also know the headlines are about, oh, look at all this cool stuff you did with AI. And I guess that's kind of the trade-off there. I can understand why you wanted to use generative AI here to create like a very specific personal thing that's related to you in your life. What do you think is the responsibility of an artist when they're using a tool like this? Because not all AI tools are made equal. And I think some companies are trying to be better about saying, hey, we were not trained on copyrighted material or things that are done by other people. What is that work that artists need to do to, you know, think about beforehand before they start using these tools?
I think it's the responsibility of the artist to define the boundaries that they want to create with. And, you know, as I just explained to you, for me, that was, you know, really with like with actors, but also in the process itself, I wanted to have the entire team have, you know, heads of department that were represented by all, you know, all human creators and artists. I had storyboard artists and a VFX supervisor and VFX artists and flame artists. And so it was really important that we had that team intact and that the AI unit was actually an additional group of people who came in to create these other forms of imagery that were merely adding to the story. So for me, at this stage, with where we're at with the technology, I felt that was very important to also allow each, you know, each department make that decision for themselves. And, you know, for instance, I had the honor of working with Caroline Shaw and Danny Lee of Ring Down. And there, you know, there was a music AI tool that, you know, they that had been created. And I was, you know, I asked them, would that be something you're interested in using? And, you know, they didn't use that. And so I think, you know, that wasn't my decision. I think for them as musicians, it's their choice if they want to experiment with that or not. And, you know, with our sound team, my mother had made a recording that was on Spotify that was in her children's album that had me crying as a baby. And except it had, you know, all kinds of other sounds over it. And the incredible team at Q Department, they were able to use an AI tool to be able to get out clean audio of my voice as a baby. And that's actually the voice of the baby in the film when it sees the mother. So I think it's really, you know, it's up to artists. And I think, you know, artists within their own specialty to really make those decisions. And I think as like a director and the leader of that team, I wanted to empower my collaborators to make those decisions.
I was reading Google's write-up of this project as well. Mm. And it sounds like you were working with people on the DeepMind team to kind of build up the models and whatever you need to prompt for VO3. Can you talk about that process and kind of how you worked with them and how much was it, you know, how much of the imagery that actually ended up here is directly what you wanted? Or was it more letting those folks kind of use the AI as an artistic tool?
Yeah, so I collaborated both with the Creative Lab and DeepMind at Google. And I, you know, had an incredible team driven by Ben Wiley and John Soat, who were the, you know, creative directors of the AI unit. And we, you know, all worked together hand in hand to, get, you know, roll our sleeves up and prompt and try to figure out how to get the kinds of images that we wanted to achieve. And when there was an issue or problem, DeepMind would come in and make those solutions for us and help us uncover how we could actually achieve the kinds of, you know, images and the types of storytelling that I was trying to achieve through the imagery. And, you know, one thing that we talked about, for example, was all of the sequence of going inside of the body. That was something that's incredibly difficult to achieve because it is very much, you know, if you try to prompt that, it's very scientific and very medical. And so we actually had one of the artists create a virtual reality model of the human body. And then we then, you know, fed that into the model. And then by using reference images of the type of look and feel that we wanted it to be like, we were able to create this one shot that would otherwise be very difficult to just type into a prompt. So I think that's part of the process that I hope people really recognize and understand, is that this takes a deep amount of knowledge and artistic communication to be able to create something that is unique. And for us, it was, you know, our artists who were prompting, it was, you know, 200 to 1,000 attempts to get one really good image. And I think, you know, it's really important for people to understand just how difficult and creative the process is for to prompt and to get something really unique and special that helps to tell a story.
That shot is pretty cool. Like it's sort of like it goes inside the body mm-hmm. and you get this really cool internal view. But I'm also, you know, I'm aware of all the other tools we kind of have right now too, yeah. like real-time rendering, like people using game engines to mm-hmm. do CG-like work without the hardcore, you know, rendering like you used to do, or having 3D artists do a lot of that work. It does seem like there are other tools that you could do to get a similar effect. What is the value with using AI to do this versus some of those other tools, you think? Because I when I keep talking to people about AI, like a lot of people are just like, this stuff, especially, I don't need you to answer for like Google or DeepMind, but this stuff was trained on YouTube. This was trained on content that was just out there. And these are other people's artistic things that these models were built on. And kind of those artists will never get any sort of like compensation for being the basis of this model. And now you can build this specific shot in it and do it more easily, sure. But you could have also done that with real-time rendering or just like, yeah, working with the CG artist as well, right?
It's a great question. And I think for me, you know, we are still working with all of those different people. But I think the difference is that it's the realistic image of the baby. And I think that is something that was the realistic image of the baby within the womb. I think that that's something that was super, super unique that I haven't really seen before. And it's the movement of it, you know, the movement of the hands, feet, the way that it's floating within a material that is liquid, but feels like you're inside of, you know, of a womb. That's something that's so challenging to achieve. Mm-hmm. And
I have to ask you a question. Yeah. Have you seen the seminal comedy classics, Look Who's Talking 1 and 2?
No, I have not.
And I think you should go watch those movies, because what was really so as comedies, but the opening of those movies mm-hmm. is sperm meeting an egg. And it's like the inside view that was all done with puppetry, and they get like an embryonic view, you know, in the womb. It's all puppets mm-hmm. and old school like cinematic techniques. And it looks really, really cool. So yeah, I get it. Like AI can make that much easier, but we've done this before too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I, you know, I say that also in thinking that this is just another, you know, it's another lens through which to create this imagery. It's another tool. And I think, you know, all of these tools are now accessible and available. I think it's really amazing for something like puppetry to still be used, or to, you know, use CG for a different kind of approach. I think it, again, it comes down to the artist and their technique and what they want to do to achieve the images. And for some people, AI is not the way. And for others, it might be the correct approach because of the kind of story that they want to tell. So I really do think it's, you yeah. know, the responsibility of the artist to use these tools wisely to mm-hmm. enhance stories.
Is there a danger of this? Because this tool is so easy. Mm-hmm. That's the thing about yeah. all the generative AI tools, is that you type in a prompt and you get incredibly realistic looking video now, and VO is doing sound as well to match. Is there a danger of this like very, very easy to use tool kind of supplanting the stuff that we've already been using to create these kinds of works of art?
I think, you know, absolutely, there is a danger. And I do think it's the responsibility, again, of, you know, people who are in charge of, you know, the who, you know, are in Hollywood, and the people at the top to be considerate of artists and creators and the people who are, you know, driving this process. That's why, you know, I felt really fortunate with Darren and the team at Primordial Soup to be one of the first to work with Google to actually be able to define some of those boundaries that I felt were really important as a filmmaker to have as I was going into this. And I think that it's just up to, you know, it's really, again, it's the responsibility of artists to use this tool wisely. And people, you know, people are not going to. And there's a lot of slop out there already. And I think that's only going to continue. And that's something I think, you know, collectively we're going to have to deal with as everything continues to evolve.
Gotcha. Have you seen any backlash personally, because this is a pretty renowned AI project at this point. Have people been reacting negatively to it, to you specifically?
You know, I think you put something online and everyone has a comment. And I think
I know how that is. Yeah.
You know, I think the discourse is really important and exciting. And initially I was really nervous and really scared to put this out there. It's, you know, it's, I was definitely fearful of the response and unsure how people would feel about the use of this tool. But at the end of the day, for me, I felt like I'm just trying to communicate something that's vulnerable and honest and truthful about my experience and my mom and our story and the, you know, through my own cosmic lens. And, you know, there are people who immediately are like, I don't know if I can swear on this podcast, but, you know, sure. We're like, it. You know, fuck AI, and other people who want to talk about why, you know, why this is not going to, you know, necessarily, like, this is just a tool and this is another way to create. And so I do think it's important to have that discourse online. So especially with this particular project, for people to understand how we made it and that there were so many people who were involved in the process. So
yeah, it's a long list of credits for an 8-minute short. Yeah. It is surprisingly long.
That's right. Yeah. It's, you know, I think I feel very proud of the fact that we made a short film and hired that many people. You know, I think that was really exciting to be able to have that opportunity to, you know, to really experiment with the tools. And I do, yeah, back to your question of like any negative comments, it's like I found it the initial, when we put out the trailer, I think the initial response was fearful because the material wasn't there to support it. And hopefully once the film has come out, people can really see how many human beings were the heart and soul of making Ancestra. And that was just, you know, important to me from the beginning because it's a human story. So, yeah.
I hear you. And as an artist, mm-hmm. too, like as somebody who's creating something, are you at all worried about your work being consumed by AI models and then being repurposed for other people when they're producing stuff? Like, how do you feel about that whole process?
Yeah, I think it's really, I mean, it's such a great question and something that also makes you feel really vulnerable as an artist. And, you know, we rip our hearts out and we throw it out in the universe with our work. And the idea that that can just be, you know, part of a model is really surreal. And, you know, I feel with that, artists for generations have referenced one another and built upon each other's work. And, you know, if I want to create with every film I create, I have a list of references and a mood board and a deck that I show to my collaborators. And, you know, in a sense, it's like we're so good now with just our tools at our fingertips, we could perfectly recreate a scene from a film that's already been shot. And I think that's exactly the same with what's going on here with AI, except that, you know, it's in either case, it's about what are you saying with that? How are you making it unique? How do you make these images unique to you, your story, and the look and feel of this film? And, you know, I think that that's really a similar process to how artists have, you know, operated throughout history.
Are you familiar with the movies of Satoshi Kon, like Paprika and
yes.
those things?
Yeah.
Like, great films, tremendous films. But also, I do recall there was, for a long time, Darren Aronofsky got a lot of flack for basically lifting images and scenes from those and never quite giving the credit back there. So I guess this is a thing artists sometimes do when you lift inspiration and you don't quite know how you go back to it. So it's just something I think about. And I guess with AI, it feels like we're kind of replicating, I don't know, this happening altogether. You were commissioned to do this project. Do you still want to use generative AI for your own future work, you think?
I am definitely really excited about the possibilities of it. And, you know, VO3 wasn't even out yet as we were in the midst of the project. So I didn't even know that sound and, you know, and audio and music were going to be a thing. And that I also was, when that happened, I you know, I was like, wow, this is another whole thing. I don't know if I would use audio and, you know, music generated by these images. So for me, it's like, it's a creative tool, I think is really exciting. And I do think, you know, for people who have really big ideas or people who have small ideas, but don't have access to tools, this is such a good way to be able to experiment and to be able to test your, you know, your concepts. And I feel like if I were in film school right now, I would absolutely be using the tools just to experiment as a filmmaker and figure out how I want to shoot things, what I want to say, how I would, you know, what is my vision as a filmmaker? Like, it's I think for someone at that level, it's like having, you know, the ability to shoot anything at your fingertips. And that is amazing for even me right now to be able to experiment with, to create a better idea of like, how would I want to go and make something? But again, I don't think that AI and generative video should replace a filmmaking process, because filmmaking is sacred and nothing will ever replace the creating and capturing of that ethereal moment that is being on set. So
I'm just thinking of your background. Like, you've worked on documentaries, you've worked on new media projects, you've worked on VR. Those were all things where you were kind of shaping ideas and using these new technologies to help you view them. Do you kind of lose something when it's just a text box that you're typing in and then it's producing a whole image or sequence for you? It doesn't feel like you're creating as much, I think.
So I actually think that it requires a deep amount of knowledge and craft and art in order to be able to achieve those images. As I said before, you know, like, our team at the Creative Lab, which was led by Ben Wiley and John Soat, would generate 200 to 1,000 images to get one excellent usable image.
Right.
And that was, you know, a highly defined process that was really, you know, required artists who are graphic designers and people who had the language of film and design and art direction to be able to create visuals that weren't just something you've necessarily seen before. And so I think, again, it's just another tool and another approach for, you know, for instance, we did a lot of like macro and micro photography. And so that took a lot of knowledge of those types of liquids and particles and systems. And that's something that, you know, not every artist has, but a lot of animators have. And so I think it's like really right now for the moment using language, but I think that will evolve further. So I think we are in a very nascent stage of this being where we are at with AI.
Were those micro and macro shots, were those a part of Ancestor as well?
Healing
parts
sequence.
Of it reminds me of The Fountain. Mm-hmm. Like, Aronofsky's The Fountain used a lot of like liquid effects and things like that to simulate the cosmos.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And I love Doug Trumbull's work, and I've always been really inspired mm-hmm. by him, and I love everything that Darren did on The Fountain, of course. And amazing. And I found, you know, all that to be huge inspirations for me as well, and, you know, definitely references for this. And so with, you know, the macro photography, it was a lot of like capturing the essence. And as a writer, right, it's like, okay, how do I capture the essence of this image that I want to create and distill that into a language that this that the model will be able to understand? And that to me is an art, and I do think there is a poetry to prompting.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. I mean, this is definitely nascent. We're still waiting to see like where this is all headed. Personally, I would love to see companies being like, hey, this model was not trained on anything copyrighted. Like, this model was trained on licensed data and the people who produce those things would be compensated in some way. Like, I would love to see that.
I
guess we'll see what's happening next. Yeah.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think the next step as we move forward, I think for me with Ancestra, it's like, you know, experimenting with what's possible and, again, keeping it a very personal story. But I do, you know, as this evolves, it's the responsibility of companies to not be taking copyrighted materials and to respect artists and to set those boundaries for, you know, so that artists don't get taken advantage of. And I, you know, I think that that's a really important part of our role as humans going forward, because ultimately, these are human stories for other human beings. And so it's, you know, important that we are at the center of that.
Well, Eliza, I really appreciate this chat. I've been wanting to talk to somebody who's been using AI as a purely artistic tool for a long time. So yeah, I got a lot of stuff to chew on here. Is there anything that you're working on in the future that you want to hint at? What's percolating now for you?
Well, I have written a feature film that is about going to Mars. So,
okay. Awesome.
Yeah, very excited about continuing this exploration of humanity and the cosmos.
Your space stuff, like, yeah, it's those are great experiences. I hope people can still reach those things if they have VR headsets. Yeah. I don't know if they're accessible. But I've been rewatching the reboot of Cosmos with my daughter, and she is just amazed by everything we're learning in that show. And I'm turning her into a little, you know, mini Sega Knight, I guess. So cool. It's very cool to hear you're still working on space stuff.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's so important. And honestly, my personal dream with all this work is that a young girl like your daughter watches something like Cosmos and is inspired to become a physicist or an astronaut and dream about the stars. And so I do think for me, it's like, this is AI is all, it is science and it is a tool, and experimentation is part of that and part of art. And so that very much was the approach for me with this.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Eliza. Where can we find you on the internet? Can people follow you these days doing anything?
Absolutely. I am on Instagram, and my website is elizamcnitt.com.
All right. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you so much.